We have a couple of cases on the 10 o'clock docket. First of those is Advanced Pest Management of Colorado, Inc. against Jefferson County Department of Health. Counsel, you may sit down at the council table. The second matter on the docket is Batik against Mansour. And I assume counsel are present on that case as well. You've received information sheets that tell you about the timing mechanism, but they don't tell you that it doesn't work occasionally. You are also, I'm sure, aware that we read the briefs and we've read the briefs in these cases. And we're familiar with the record. And if that helps you streamline your presentation to the court, so be it. I would request that, ladies and gentlemen in the audience, turn off your cell phones and pagers so that we're not bothered during the course of the argument. And with that request, counsel, you may proceed.
Morning. My name is Victor Boog, attorney number 2561, appearing on behalf of the Jefferson County Department of Health and Environment. I'll probably just refer to it as the department. I'm glad you've read the briefs because I don't know that I have a whole lot to add beyond what's in the briefs themselves. From the perspective of the department, it's all set forth in the summary of the argument. We don't think that there was any basis for awarding a judgment against the department for $30,000 or any other sum. And for the reasons as follows. The department paid for significant amounts of money for the GIS data that the contracts said that would be provided to the department upon request. The arguments that I've heard and seen in the opposing briefs are that, well, you didn't ask for them within the year that the contract was entered into, so therefore we didn't have any obligation to give it to you after the fact. There's nothing in the contract that says when and when we cannot ask for this data. It merely says that upon request, written request, it'll be provided within 2 weeks, and it was in this case.
Mr. Boog, I take it you would agree that the two contracts, the two prior contracts, were year term documents.
They were contracts that provided for services for a particular year. That's right.
So even if the contracts provided for the acquisition of the GIS data in favor of the department, you would also agree that any data generated after that wouldn't be subject to those prior contracts?
I would agree with that, and there's no evidence in this record that the data we requested was generated after the 2 years in question. We only asked for the data that was generated in the 2 years in question, and there was no evidence in this record that what we asked for and what we received included anything but that. The irony was that at the trial of this case, the colored mosquito attempted to say that certain things were trade secrets. And the trial court threw out the trade secret claim against the department before it ever went to the jury. The jury threw out the trade secret claim for misappropriation against Ottertail, the competitor. So nobody thought that there were any trade secrets here. The data in question was generated by virtue of aerial photography provided by the county at the county's expense at no charge to Colorado Mosquito. And the other data that was required to produce these maps was the on-foot investigation and field work done each season by Colorado Mosquito, for which it was paid hundreds of thousands of dollars. And when you look at the contracts are very specific that as a result of that, the department was entitled to receive upon request all their records, all their maps, all their data. And that's in fact why they gave the data when the department requested it. It had been paid for in full in advance. So what we have here is somebody who after the fact wants to say, this is a trade secret, you can't share it with anybody. There's nothing in these contracts that says any such thing.
Well, but as I, the claim for implied breach of contract doesn't rest on whether it was a trade secret or not, does it?
To me, the whole idea of the elements of proving an implied contract is that you didn't have a contract covering these circumstances in the first place. And we had a contract. we were entitled to the documents pursuant to the contracts that existed.
Yeah, what you had was express contracts for two separate years.
Yes.
And so I guess it was wasn't it a question then for the jury to figure out was there an implied new implied contract here or not?
The only thing that there was no testimony or even argument that the data that was delivered was not data produced in the two successive years. The question was whether or not they could, after the fact, say, this is a trade secret and you can't share it with anybody.
Did anybody from the county respond to that by saying, oh, no, we disagree with you, before they provided it to the competitor?
What happened was that the county attorney, or the attorney who represented the board at the time, looked at this and thought it was preposterous and said, share it with this competitor. The only reason we're rebidding this contract for 2005 is because Colorado Mosquito said, surely their bid wasn't with knowledge of the true facts in the field. So we rebid it.
But did anybody communicate with Advanced Pest Management, Colorado Mosquito,
and say, I don't know that anybody
we see your
them.
Email, we see your disclaimer, and we disagree?
I don't think that happened.
Mr. Boog, I thought that the data that actually found its way into the hands of the department here had been significantly updated to include as many as 350 additional sites.
If that occurred, it happened in the year 2004 when they had men in the field, students from schools and stuff that go out and do the sampling on all the stagnant water sources in the county for which they were paid.
But wasn't there express testimony that some of this data was collected and put together with the final 2005 data that was sent to the county, that was done post the 2004 mosquito year?
I don't think there was any such testimony. The testimony is that in 2004, they go out in the spring, they start their processes in the field, and at the end of the year, they give reports. There was no evidence that as of February of the following year, when this data was requested, that they had done anything beyond 2004. They weren't out in the field checking for mosquitoes in January or February, I can assure you that.
They could have been manipulating data. I mean, they could have been running all sorts of whatever people do with data.
They had the obligation to do that for their data that they recovered in 2004 and to provide that upon request of the county.
In 2004, but after 2004, couldn't they have done whatever they wanted to with the data in terms of manipulating it, reorganizing it, and analyzing it?
This data was all 2004 data.
The data was collected in 2004.
Yes, and we were
entitled. But we'll be collecting data in 2010 census data that will be analyzed for several years to come.
Yeah.
So isn't there a difference between data collection and data compilation and analysis?
Not under this contract. It says that they will provide all this GIS mapping and data. They didn't, when they got our request in February of 2005, they didn't say, geez, we're going to need 2 weeks because we haven't done that work yet, and we wouldn't have been doing it until after the fact. Anyhow, this is work that was done the prior year based on the prior year's field work. It was not something that all of a sudden they did for the first time after the fact. And the plain fact of the matter is, if you read these contracts, and they're pretty specific, they're not ambiguous, we were entitled to all of the data that justified the GIS results. And the fact that we didn't ask for them in October, November, December, doesn't mean that we're not entitled to them in February, the subsequent year. More importantly, we paid for this data. And the jury instructions in this case were wholly erroneous. I don't think there's any dispute about that. The jury instruction given on elements was right out of the jury instruction book. The jury instruction on damages presented by us was right out of the instruction book. Court chose, for whatever reason, not to use it. So the jury instruction, which says, in effect, that even if you find that there was an implied contract and there was a breach of it, the damages are, and the last line is, less any amount previously paid for this data. And the court didn't grant that jury instruction, and we'd paid in spades for this data. So for that reason alone, this needs to be reversed. And on the issue of prejudgment interest, the court didn't award prejudgment interest because it didn't rule on post-trial motions for prejudgment interest or other costs. So it was deemed denied by Judge Sandstead because he just never got around to it or didn't do it.
Well, let's talk about that a little bit. I mean, the motion requesting prejudgment interest, the trial court ruled, wasn't a Rule 59 motion. And so it wasn't subject to 59J. How do you respond to that?
I respond to it by saying that it is a motion that this court can determine whether, as a matter of law, it was a post-trial motion subject to 59. The fact of the matter is it wasn't a Rule 60 motion, and even if it was, under Rule 60, the cases are pretty clear that some judge after the fact isn't able to come in under Rule 60 and grant costs when, in fact, there's no foundation in the record to support these costs in the first place.
This is a prejudgment interest case.
Prejudgment interest, yeah.
What cases are you referring to?
The cases in my brief point out that if, in fact, a trial court fails to grant something that's mandatorily, there's a mandatory entitlement to, like prejudgment interest, then it can be corrected after the fact. There was no mandatory requirement of payment of prejudgment interest in this case. My client never retained any property of Power Mosquitoes. They just sent out a disk and they had all this data all the time. It never left their possession.
Don't we have binding Colorado Supreme Court authority that says in breach of contract actions, you get mandatory prejudgment interest under 512, whatever it is?
Yeah, and under 512, they can't justify prejudgment interest in this case.
Why is this case different than any other?
Because we didn't withhold any money from them, and we didn't withhold any property from them. The fact is, we didn't get any benefit out of this property.
The jury said you didn't pay them for something that they gave you and that you then gave to their competitor.
Well, the jury didn't say that. The jury said under the elements that they had an expectation they were going to get paid if we gave it to somebody else. The jury already knew we paid for it, and when the jury was asked whether we were unjustly enriched by receipt of this data, they said no.
Let me ask you a more fundamental question on this issue. The mosquito people say that you did not file any written objection to the request for prejudgment interest, and there's no transcript of any argument. What basis is there for your having preserved this error?
I've read the record on the proceedings before the senior judge. It's my belief that that is part of the record in this case. But the fact of the matter is the time for granting that had long since expired. And so this judge had no jurisdiction to grant that. Now, my further argument is that there's no reason to remand it for further consideration of that issue because there's no basis under 512, 101, and 102 to grant prejudgment interest in this case anyhow. I'd like to reserve the last minutes I have.
All right, Mr. Boob, you've got about 2 minutes and 40 seconds.
Morning, Your Honors. May it please the court, my name is Matthew Wolf. I represent the appellee and the plaintiff in the trial court action, Advanced Pest Management, who does business as Colorado Mosquito, and I will sometimes refer to as CMC, as was done during the court at the trial. This case centers around my client, Colorado Mosquito's delivery of its proprietary GIS data to Jefferson County on February 16, 2005, in an email. A great deal of this multi-week trial was devoted to precisely what GIS data is, but in a nutshell, GIS data overlays maps and allows the end user to identify the precise location and precise contours of areas of infestation, and more importantly, allows the end user to determine how each site was treated, the type of mosquitoes that were addressed, the type of pesticide that was applied, the number of visits, and et cetera. Almost every witness who testified during trial indicated that the GIS data was extremely valuable in the mosquito abatement business. Colorado Mosquito provided this information in an email dated February 16, 2005, and that email read, "Please remember that these files are protected by trade secret statutes and are not to be used internally by Jefferson County Department of Health and Environment, and are to be used internally by JEFCO only, and may not be given to the general public or potential competitors." It's undisputed, it was undisputed at the trial court, that Jefferson County utterly ignored this condition and immediately provided its GIS data to Colorado Mosquito's competitor, Ottertail, and then awarded the contract to Ottertail.
Counsel, excuse me for interrupting, but Mr. Boog has said, told us that there is no evidence that any of this data was anything other than what had been generated, compiled, whatever, prior to December 31, 2004. Is that your understanding as well?
No, Your Honor. Unfortunately, I can't point you to a specific reference in the record, but there was testimony from Mike McGinnis that he continued to update and manipulate the data between the end of the season in 2004 and the time that the information was produced in 2005.
When was the end of the season in 2004?
Fall, roughly September, October is when they stop actually actively servicing the sites. And then they begin to do that entire winter period in the mosquito abatement business. They start, you know, working on their data internally, updating the data, updating the records, inputting all the information that the site techs are out in the field obtaining.
If the data had been requested by the county in 2004, let's say in December 2004, and then your client would have been required to provide it, correct?
No, Your Honor, I disagree.
Was there any point in time when your client would have been required to provide the data?
Not the GIS data. And there was a great deal of testimony and a great deal of argument about this during the trial. Now, Mr. Boog takes the position that the contracts are clear and unambiguous that Colorado Mosquito was obligated to produce the GIS data. The contract from 2004 provides, and this is as close as it gets, ArcView GIS data will be used to develop operational maps and databases to promote accurate and efficient field work, reporting and control activities, etc. Copies of all maps, records, logs, complaints, and correspondence will be made available. So the contract required Colorado Mosquito to utilize GIS data and required it to produce copies of maps and correspondence. Those are two very different things, and that was made abundantly clear to the jury. Now, this is a contract interpretation that everyone who testified agreed to, including Jefferson County's own director, Jim Dale. Dr. Dale testified that the 2003 and 2004 contracts were silent as to the ownership of the GIS data. Their own director agreed that the contracts did not cover the GIS data. Mr. McGinnis testified to that fact, the owner of CMC. CMC's expert testified to that fact. And again, as you've noted, the contract was for a term of 1 year. So even if it required production of that data, which it did not, they requested it after the expiration of the contract term.
Record that would indicate time prior to February 16, 2005, when Colorado Mosquito asserted ownership of that data and asserted it to the county?
I don't believe that it ever came up prior to that period of time. I know that there's nothing in the record that Jefferson County requested that data prior to that period of time. Now, in an earlier year, 2003, I believe, they actually specifically contracted for the ownership of some GIS data. Now, the reason that Jefferson County asked for it in 2005 is because it had gone from about 300 sites to about 800 sites. The data was drastically different. But in 1 year, which is evidence that the parties knew how to contract for the ownership of that data, they did specifically contract for the ownership of the data, but they did not relative to the 2004 contract.
So some of the 2003 data, I'm sorry, I didn't quite follow that. So there was data that was collected in 2003, which was owned by whom?
Well, there was a contract in 2003 that required Colorado Mosquito to go out into the field, collect data, create GIS information, and then provide that GIS information to the county. Actually, I believe it was 2002, not 2003. So they did in 1 year contract for the production of GIS data. But the GIS data that was at issue in this trial is drastically different from that data. There was a great deal of testimony, both from Colorado Mosquitoes principal and the expert, differentiating those two pieces of information.
That quantified? You say it was drastically different. Was that quantified?
It was quantified in a way. In the year 2002, there was roughly 300, maybe less, infestation sites that were identified. By 2005, the data that was provided to Jefferson County include 813 sites. So it had almost tripled. And obviously, the information underlying all those sites had been developed to a great degree. I'd like to touch on the market value issue. Jefferson County argues in its brief that there was insufficient evidence to support the jury's finding as to the reasonable value of Colorado Mosquitoes data. However, the owner of Colorado Mosquito, Michael McGinnis, testified based upon his extensive experience and his knowledge of the GIS data that data was worth $50,000. Mr. McGinnis is uniquely qualified to provide such an opinion because under established Colorado law, an owner of a business is entitled to testify as to the value of its assets, which is precisely what he did here. That testimony went completely uncontested by Jefferson County. Jefferson County's arguments in its brief is that that judgment by the jury, that verdict by the jury, can't stand because Colorado Mosquito didn't present any third party who was willing to pay a specific price for that information, specific amount for that information. To begin with, it's simply irrelevant. The law in Colorado is quite established that fair market value is a term that has been long been used in the law as applicable to property having no actual or current marketplace. And that's from opinion from the division of this court, Conoco Inc. Additionally, it's simply untrue. There was, in fact, testimony from individuals other than Mike McGinnis about the value of the property.
Didn't the owner of Ottertail say he'd have to increase the price of the bid by $37,000?
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. The next issue that Mr. Boob touched on was the jury verdict. The jury instruction. As your honors know, the trial court has substantial discretion in formulating jury instructions so long as they don't include incorrect statements of the law and fairly and adequately cover the issues presented. The thrust of Jeffco's argument is that the trial court erred by failing to give a CJI-approved instruction. In particular, Jefferson County complains that the instruction should have directed the jury to subtract any monies previously paid. Contrary to Jefferson County's contention, the trial court is not bound to give a CJI instruction. In fact, under Rule 51.1 subsection 2, a court can and should deviate from a particular CJI instruction where the facts warrant it. Here, the facts warranted it because there was absolutely no evidence in the record that Jefferson County paid for this information.
Well, let me just try to understand. Either in 2002 or 2003, you said they did contract for GIS data. Was that included among the data that was provided on February 16, 2005?
Not really. And the reason I say not really and can't answer you definitively is because that information contained 200 or so sites. The testimony was that maybe a handful of those sites remained. Mosquito infestation sites move, they change. So the vast majority of those sites were no longer there. It moved, 10 feet to the left, 10 feet to the right. The contours of those sites had changed. So there was some little piece of that information that remained, but it had changed to such a drastic degree that it really wasn't the same information. Again, as I indicated, Jefferson County's own director testified that the prior year's contracts did not cover this GIS data, the GIS data that was issue in the case. Therefore, providing the form CJI instruction would only have confused the jury. J- Jefferson County's final contention on appeal challenges the trial court's award of prejudgment interest. Specifically, Jefferson County argues that CMC was not entitled to prejudgment interest under Section 512.102. That provision provides for the award of prejudgment interest where parties have not contracted for the award and where money has been wrongfully held. Jefferson County argues in its brief, and Mr. Boog argues here today, that no money was wrongfully held and it wasn't a creditor of CMC. I mean, in short, this simply ignores the jury's verdict. The jury found that Jefferson County was in breach of an implied contract as of February 16th, 2005. As of that date, Colorado Mosquito became a creditor of Jefferson County.
The law court have jurisdiction to enter the award when it did?
I believe it did. I believe it had jurisdiction under Rule 60. I believe it had jurisdiction under Rule 60 to award prejudgment interest that the plaintiff had asked for in a timely manner, had asked for in its complaint. It was a procedural technical error for it not being entered. And even if it didn't have jurisdiction, even if this was subject to Rule 59J, which requires that it technically be entered within 60 days, division of this court, Argulies versus Ridgeway, a case that's strikingly similar to this one, the Court of Appeals addressed a motion for prejudgment interest that was entered 62 days after the entry of judgment. And there the court held that the denial of the motion through a procedural delay the court cannot stand, affirmed the lower court's judgment with the exception of the failure to include prejudgment interest, and then ordered the cause remanded with directions to award the plaintiff's costs and statutory interest. So, again, I believe that it was a proper award under Rule 60, but even if it wasn't, the appropriate thing, I believe, for this court to do is simply order it remanded for the entry of prejudgment interest under 59J.
Was there even a judgment entered prior to this? I mean, I know the court signed a minute order, which kind of incorporated the jury's findings, but was there a judgment even entered?
I believe that there was. I believe that the parties had some confusion about that and therefore stipulated to the entry of judgment as to a certain date for the purposes of post-trial motions. And I do concede that the prejudgment interest award was not entered within that 60-day period of time. And I believe the reason was that the trial judge was on a leave of absence during that period of time, which required a visiting judge to rule on the motion. One other issue I'd like to address very briefly. Jefferson County contends in this appeal that the jury's verdicts were inconsistent. Specifically, the $30,000 awarded against Jefferson County is inconsistent with the $8,000 awarded against Otter Tail. In short, Your Honors, these are two different judgments against two different defendants based upon two different claims. On the one hand, you have a $30,000 judgment against Jefferson County for the fair market value of the data. On the other hand, you have a judgment against Otter Tail for $8,000, which represents the disgorgement of Otter Tail's profits. Jefferson County, in its brief, simply ignores the jury instruction relative to the misappropriation of business value claim against Otter Tail and focuses only on the verdict form. But the verdict form obviously has to be viewed through the lens of the jury instruction. And when you do that, those two judgments are readily reconcilable. In fact, there is no inconsistency whatsoever. Thank you, Your Honors.
Thank you, Mr. Wolf. Mr. Boog.
In brief, this GIS data changes year to year. And although the suggestion was it's extremely valuable, Otter Tail found it had no value at all. The only reason it wanted it is because it was told it didn't have the right to submit a bid without knowing about this because it wasn't educated.
Well, doesn't that amount to value if they can't bid on the contract? Obviously, it has some value to them in
they
order to be able to bid on the contract.
They bid on it right the first time. They didn't change the bid the second time. It didn't matter whether they had this data at all. The only reason they said, give me the data so they can't complain I didn't have the data. Secondly, the data that was created in 2003 under the sites, the 200 or 300 sites, There weren't 813 sites in 2004 at all. It turned out that CMC was counting some sites as many as three times. And the sites are basically the same. They're the same stagnant pools of water. Are they different? Yeah, maybe there's more rain in the spring in one year than in the other, and the site's a little larger. But the location of the sites are literally the same. Whether they had mosquitoes in one year versus the next year, that can vary. But the bottom line is this. When you look at page 13 of my brief, we paid for the original map in spades. We paid for all the data that went into making the GIS information. In 2004, the contract says, we will produce, maintain, and update operational maps and databases using ArcView GIS. And we will furnish such maps and data to JCDHE upon 2 weeks written notice. That's why I say this is unambiguous and black and white. We were entitled to that data. We had paid for it. It was part of the scope of product that we were entitled to. And when we asked for it, we got it. They come in with the last second with, oh, we have a condition here. You can't share this with anybody. Where did that condition come from? It wasn't in the contract. There's nothing in this contract that says any of the data they're producing is for our eyes only, or we can't even share it with the public. I mean, come on, we're a public agency. We can't share this. We could probably have to give it up on open records requests. The idea that somehow they were entitled to more money second time around for the same data we were entitled to in the first place is ludicrous. There was no market for this data. Who wanted it? Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Boog. Thank you, Mr. Wolf. The matter is deemed submitted, and you can expect a written opinion to issue in due course.